Good afternoon. Welcome to the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development. It's Wednesday, April 10th. A couple of announcements to get started. Representative McEwen is excused. Representative Parrish is going to be leaving a little bit early after she arrives. House Bill 2657 is going to be carried over to our next meeting. And with that, we will start the rest of our agenda. Open the public hearing on House Bill 2725. Troy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 2725 provides that off-road operating permit for all-terrain vehicle must be issued in form of identification plate rather than decal if vehicle is not otherwise registered with the Department of Transportation. I believe Representative Buckley here is to speak to the bill and the amendments.
Thank you very much. Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County and the legislature. Thank you for your time today and consideration. Colleagues, this bill came from a constituent request, resident of Johns Peak, just outside of Jacksonville. The Johns Peak area is an ATV riding area. I think it's one of the only areas in the state, or at least one of the few areas in the state, where residential properties are right within a ATV riding area. And there's been some significant difficulties with trespassing and property damage. My constituent came up with the idea saying, you know, if there were licenses on ATVs, then we could recognize the people that are doing property damage or trespassing, and therefore that they could be followed up on and try to stop that behavior. We investigated the possibility of licensing. It didn't seem a viable solution, trying to work with DMV on how to get that done. Ron Price, who's here today, is the ATV grant program coordinator. He made some good comments to me about focusing on the enforcement, how we can possibly enforce violations of private property or property damage. So I'm asking the committee, if you'd be so kind, I have not had time to work this bill to the extent that I would like to. If your committee would be kind enough to send to Ways and Means, it would be fine if you'd send it with no recommendation. I just would like to get there, to continue to work with the ATV grant program people and with the Oregon State Police on the possibility of developing a pilot program for enforcement that might start with a project at Johns Peak and then go elsewhere in the state if there are significant problems elsewhere in the state with trespassing and other violations. Mr. Price brought up the idea of titling ATVs. That's been brought up in the past. The pros and cons of it, quite simply, are do you have the ability to track a bike that's been stolen? Would seem to be a good service for ATV riders, but again, that is an idea that we could follow up on. But we are going to drop the idea of trying to get a license on these bikes because it just seems to be improbable. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Buckley. Are there questions? So just to be clear, for the benefit of the committee and those who have also signed up to testify, your preference would be that we move the bill to Ways and Means. We do so without recommendation and let you continue to work there on the amendments and the other concerns that might otherwise be expressed today. Have I got that right?
That's right, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So I'm going to suggest, we do have, as Troy is pointing out, a letter from the Speaker approving the referral to the Ways and Means Committee, so that is possible for us to do. And I'm going to suggest that the folks who have signed up to testify might reserve their comments for the Ways and Means Committee and continue to work with Representative Buckley if the committee chooses to move the bill forward and probably save everyone some time today and continue the discussion there. So is that agreeable to most people in the room? I don't see anybody else rushing forward to testify, so I think that will work. Representative Cameron?
Mr. Chair, with all due respect, this is a policy discussion, and we're going to send it down to Ways and Means now to craft policy.
Well, Representative Cameron, I think that it's a valid comment. The exception, I suppose, is that the chief sponsor of the bill here has a role there that might afford him the opportunity to take that task on. I'd invite any comment you might like to make.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, that's absolutely valid. House rules, any policy change would have to be done in consultation with the chair of the committee, we will try our best to try to get some sort of consensus agreement that would be agreeable to the ATV community as well as the state police or anybody else involved.
Thank you. Representative Benz?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I'm sure Representative Cameron's concerned, and I've heard on this bill already a number of comments from my district, very great concerns about it. And so I must say, I would like to help in every way I could, but I'd rather have the hearing here. So I'm not enthusiastic about the suggestion, Mr. Chair. That's the truth of it.
Okay. I'm fine hearing from people who have testified that would ease your anxiety.
Mr. Chair, it would ease my anxiety. It probably won't change my vote. How's that?
That's clear.
Yeah.
Other comments? Well, then I think it probably does make sense to try to move the discussion on to the Ways and Means Committee. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2725 and open a work session on House Bill 2725. Representative Gorsuch.
Oh, sir. Okay. Mr. Chairman. I was looking for a script, but there's no script here. So, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move that we take House Bill 2725 and move it to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Gorsuch moves that House Bill 2725 be referred to Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections?
No. Well, I'm going to follow on with Clip. I'll say no. I'll put myself as a no on the record.
Very good. Let's call the roll, please. The motion, just again, is to send the bill to Ways and Means Committee without recommendation.
Mm-hmm. Representative Cameron?
No.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Doherty?
Yes.
Representative Wadley?
Yes.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
No.
Representative Benz?
No.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative
Reed. Aye. The motion, having received the required majority.
Well, wait a minute. There's nine of us? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oh, nine. Okay, sorry. Just counting. Sorry.
The motion, having received the required majority, is adopted, and House Bill 2725 goes to the Ways and Means Committee without recommendation. We'll close the work session.
Chair, thank you. And members, I will bring Representative Cameron, Representative Benz, Representative Parrish, Representative Davis. I will bring any changes that are proposed to this bill to you for discussion and consultation. Again, I'm trying to address a constituent concern. If we can get it done in a way that there seems to be consensus on, we'll move forward. If we can't, then we won't.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moving on, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3227. Senator Starr, if you'd like to come forward and have a summary from Troy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 3227 relating to taxation on fuels allows a person that uses natural gas or propane in motor vehicle to pay annual use fuel license fee in lieu of per gallon tax, takes effect on 91st day following adjournment of sign and die.
Thank you. Senator Starr.
Thank you very much. For the record, Senator Bruce Starr, I have the distinct privilege of representing Western Washington County in the Oregon Senate, and I bring you House Bill 3227. We do have a dash one amendment that I believe is on four star, or you might have it in this packet.
OLUS?
OLUS, I'm sorry.
That's another system, I think.
I hear Bruce Starr.
Yes, OLUS. Thank you. So real quickly, the gist of this is that the issue was brought to me earlier in the session when individuals that are proponents, sellers of propane and natural gas, primarily propane, talked about a program that is operative in Washington State. And today, if you have a vehicle that operates on natural gas or propane, you pay a use tax. That's as equivalent to the per gallon tax, fuel tax that folks that use gasoline pay. The challenge that folks have, and it's primarily propane users, is that you can drive by a gasoline station or a gas station, and they have the big propane filling tank there that folks use to fill up their barbecue tank. When you fill up your barbecue tank, you don't pay any use tax. You don't have to pay, you know, the tax that you would pay if you were using that fuel on the road. So a lot of these stations aren't situated or set up to collect that use tax. What this bill contemplates is allowing for individuals that have a propane vehicle that runs on propane to be able to buy a decal, a flat fee, basically a one-time charge to cover their road user charge, their use of the highway system. In one fell swoop, be able to pay for that for the year. And then they can go basically anywhere where they have one of those big giant propane tanks, and the proprietor of that station can, you know, look on their window, or I'm not sure exactly how it would necessarily be displayed. Maybe it's just something they have in the car that they can show that they paid their tax, and then the proprietor then can fill up their vehicle with propane, and those individuals can be on their way. Why would we do this? Why would we make it easier for folks to drive with propane? I would suggest that it's an alternative fuel. It's a cheaper fuel than gasoline. It creates less emissions, if that's something that concerns you. It provides for us to potentially create an incentive to wean us off of foreign oil. I think all of those reasons are valid reasons to support this bill. I'm interested in creating policies that make it easier for folks to utilize alternative fuels. This bill is narrow, relates to natural gas and propane. Really, if you talk to the folks out there in the real world, it's mostly propane. But I think it's a good policy to do this. The Dash 1 amendments have been created in consultation with the Department of Transportation, as they kind of looked at the original bill and said, you know, we like where you're going, but we need to make some changes. And so the Dash 1s are in front of you based on those discussions with the Department of Transportation, primarily Jim Witte. So I believe Jim is in the back of the room. So, colleagues, I'd ask for your positive action on House Bill 3227, the Dash 1 amendments. I believe the bill does have a subsequent referral. You know, this will cost a little bit of money in order to get it situated. But we're not on the cutting edge here. We're basically replicating a program that's exists in Washington State. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions that you might have. And if not, you can have other folks come to the witness table.
So there's one other person who's signed up to testify. That's Alex Gallard. Why don't we ask him to come forward? And I'm guessing we're going to have some questions for you, Mr. Witte. So if you'd like to come forward, too, while they're getting settled, we'll see if there are any questions for you, Senator Starr. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair. Senator Starr, how were the fees set, especially in regards to the idea that Oregon has that those who use our roads should pay for the use of the roads? So I wonder how these numbers were come to. And maybe that's a better question for Mr. Witte.
Yeah, exactly. Jim would be the best person to answer that question.
Thanks.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I was getting settled and didn't quite hear the whole question.
Mr. Witte, the question is, how were the fees set in the Dash 1 amendments to be commensurate with the average use of a propane vehicle to compensate for the use on the roads, Oregon roads?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Davis, I did this in consultation with the fuels tax group at ODOT. James Witte, manager of ODOT's Office of Innovative Partnerships. We did this in concert with the fuels tax group and some economists at ODOT to try to set an average rate. And I can't say how the economists actually did this, but when you look at the bill and the amendment, you got to read Section 2, Paragraph 1, with Subsection 2, because the base rate is not what's paid. You've got a formula in the subsection 2. And essentially the way it works out is take the base rate times 2.5, and that gets you the rate they'll actually pay. All right. And so you're looking at, in the amendment, 60 would be 150, 300 would end up being 750, and 400 would be 1,000. And it's basically what the vehicle pays currently if they were to pay the gallon charge or the volume charge. And it's based on the miles per gallon, roughly, of that category. That's how it was done.
Thank you.
Sufficient for you?
Perfect.
Okay. Could you describe that, the effect, just in without too much reference to the calculations, the effect is just to match the average to come to parity. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, that's what we try to do working with Senator Starr, is to hit that parity number.
Very good. Thank you. Other questions? Representative Cameron.
I'm a little slower on this one. So the parity of what? Parity to what?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, parity to what an average vehicle in this particular category, 0 to 10,000 pounds, 10,000 pounds, 26,000 pounds, or 26,000 pounds and above, would pay if they did pay the used fuel tax.
So so we had to base that on some miles they drive, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, not necessarily. It's simply the total burden of that class divided by the number of vehicles, in a sense, something like that is how they came up with it.
All of them, because we've heard, Mr. Chair, we've heard another bill when we used 35,000 miles to buy out on EVs. So are we talking about a 35,000 mile buyout on this particular vehicle?
Mr. Chair, Representative Reed, no. This is an average, not a high. That bill we're talking about is a high flat fee. It's meant to be a maximum fee for maximum number of miles traveled for a given type of vehicle. Yeah, this is an average.
A follow-up, if I may. So this is an average miles traveled by that type of vehicle, and that's how you've computed what the tax would be, and now I can go in and pay the flat fee and be done.
Mr. Chair, Representative Reed, roughly, again, I'm not an economist, so I can't really explain exactly what their rationale was, but roughly speaking, I think you're on point.
Thank you.
Questions? Representative Betts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, is part of the goal here to get more people to use propane on the road, make this as straightforward and simple as possible to make sure we get more service stations offering this type of alternative fuel so we might drive down the cost of fuels for everybody?
In short, yes. As you create, it's that chicken and egg issue that we're challenged with in alternative fuels. If there's not the infrastructure to fuel your vehicle, it makes it more difficult to sell folks on the conversion. And we're talking primarily on conversion, particularly as it relates to propane. So yeah, let's make it easier, as easy as possible. We've got these big propane tanks sitting, you know, in gasoline station, you know, all over the state. Let's make it so that folks can fuel up there.
And my understanding is that the cost of propane is, depending upon the day, dramatically less.
Yeah, and you probably have an expert at the other end of the desk here that can verify, but yes, that's true.
Right, and follow up, if I may. Going back to the original concept, the idea is to try to have more places that offer this fuel, much less expensive, and as time passes, people have a choice, and thus we all benefit. That's kind of the idea.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
And unless we have other burning questions at the moment, I'm realizing that we're taking away from Mr. Gallard's testimony. Perhaps we're asking all the questions that you were going to cover anyway and making your job easier, but we want to give you a chance to testify, please.
Indeed you were. That's fine. Good afternoon, Chairman Representative Reed. And committee members. My name is Alex Gallard. I am in-house counsel for Blue Star Gas. Blue Star Gas is a company that operates in the state of Washington, California, and Oregon. In Oregon, we have 6 offices and 30 employees, and we have been successfully selling propane, paying taxes, and creating jobs for over 3 decades. I'm before you to testify on behalf of 3227. If it's implemented, as we discussed, companies will annually purchase a decal for a relatively nominal fee. And if we speak to the price, currently propane autogas right now is selling at $1.75 less than gasoline. And when you compare that, if you couple that with the decal program and you combine the two, the incremental savings makes a significant impact on the financial analysis of fleet operators. So predominantly the fleet companies coming using the fuel to operate their fleet vehicles. Similar decal programs exist in Oregon. In Oregon's neighboring states, California, Washington, Idaho, and Utah. In the case of California and Washington, their decal programs have been in existence since the mid-1970s. And they both have played a major role in the adoption of alternative fuels in that state. House Bill 3227 will allow Oregon to join these states in having a positive effect on incentivizing programs to run on alternative fuels. When you combine the tax savings with the comparatively low cost of alternative fuels and the fact that 97% of propane and natural gas are consumed or created in the state of in North America, you recognize that House Bill 3227 helps facilitate a triple win for this state. There is a significant economic savings, there is a significant environmental benefit, and it reduces our country's reliance on foreign oil. With the decal program, adoption of alternative fuels will be more widespread and economic savings can be realized in difficult economic times. It is a very cost-effective tool Oregon can deploy to encourage the adoption of alternative fuels in a meaningful way to the consumer. And in doing so, the state will reap the economic savings and environmental benefits that occur from using alternative fuels and displacing gasoline. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My apologies for mispronouncing your last name.
That's okay.
I always have to guess before I hear someone else say it. Any questions for these gentlemen? Representative Benson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, what about the federal tax?
And on propane, the federal tax is 18.3, and this would not be affected by that, by this program. Is that the answer to your question?
No. My question is, this takes care of the state.
Yes.
How does the federal tax get paid by those that are driving these types of vehicles?
The tax is paid by the would be paid by our company. So what you would have is a typical transaction can be done by bulk sales. So when we fill in all the propane into a tank, we would take those gallons, sell it, and then remit that tax to the federal government.
Okay. Follow-up question. Yeah. So it seems to me we have to be very clear in the decal program, since it's only good for 1 year, that number might change. How do we do that? How do we tell folks not to get too accustomed to the amount they're paying?
So we're putting this in statute. How would it change?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bence, it's a statutory requirement. It's a law, so it would have to be a legislative change. So if you're talking about that, that's simply notifying people that the change has occurred. But
let me break in then. If I'm hearing you right, it wouldn't change unless the statute were changed.
Yes,
someone might propose an amendment to create some sort of an index or something, but that's not in the Dash 1 amendments that are before us right now.
That's right. Now, right. Subsection 2 has a reference to the use fuel tax, and that also is set by the legislature. So it's not an index. It's a reference that's to a tax that's already set by the legislature.
Right. The legislature could enact some other index. I didn't mean to suggest the index was in here already, but
okay. Representative Benz. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I was just wondering how quickly I should get my car changed over to propane. And then secondly, when other folks, for example, truckers or other folks that are unhappy about how this fits with our constitutional requirements might... how many people are going to have to be using this program before that would become a problem, if at all?
I don't see it being. I mean, the number would have to be pretty significant. I don't see that happening. I don't believe you're going to see a problem. And these charges will roll into the Highway Trust Fund. So I don't see it being a big problem, really.
Thank you.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair. Do we know how many propane vehicles are currently on the road in Oregon?
Mr. Chair, Representative Davis, I don't have that information. Yeah. I can probably get it for you, though, and it's not very many.
Yeah.
Any questions? I don't see any. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That completes the list of people who have signed up to testify, and including one person who didn't, but we're glad to have your testimony as well. Mr. Whitty, anyone else who wants to be heard on House Bill 3227? Don't see anyone. So we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3227. And open a work session on House Bill 3227.
dash ones.
We do need the dash ones.
Chair, I'll move dash ones to House Bill 3227.
Thank you. Representative Cameron moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 3227. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash one amendments are adopted. This bill's next step is in Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I'll move 3227 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with the subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Cameron moves House Bill 3227 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there a discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carried. House Bill 3227 goes on to the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you. Close the work session on House Bill 3227. And open a public hearing on House Bill 3425. Representative Widener, if you'd like to come forward and bring anyone you'd like, we'll hear a summary from Troy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 3425 creates income tax credit for investment in business that manufactures three-dimensional printers, media equipment, and medical devices. Applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2014, and before January 1st, 2020. Takes effect on 91st day upon adjournment.
Representative Widener, we have a couple of things to go after this, so I think you've got a lot of people here, and I want to, in the most diplomatic and polite way possible, encourage you to use your time as well as you can. We'll have to move on to another bill in about 20 minutes or so.
We shall, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Rep. Jim Widener, representing House District 24 with parts of Yamhill and Washington County. Chair Reed, distinguished members of the House Committee on Transportation Economic Development, thank you for the time and consideration of House Bill 3425. In December, I had a meeting with the Vice President of Evergreen Aviation Airlines, which provides international air cargo transportation. We asked Vice President Lou Drever, what was trending internationally in emerging markets and what would be a good legislative concept for business development and investment here in Oregon? Immediately, he asked what we knew about 3D printing. After investigating into the 3D printing industry, we drafted House Bill 3425. 3D printing technology arrived on the general consumer market just a few years ago. But since then, 3D printing has made incredible strides and opened technological possibilities previously considered unobtainable. With the rapid advancements of material that are capable of being utilized by a 3D printer, such as metal, plastic, and even adult stem cell, bioink, and the demand within the global market will continue to grow and change the way in which retail industries and healthcare systems operate. This bill is simple. House Bill 3425 seeks to incentivize investment in emerging technologies and expand the existing high-tech industry. The implementation of this bill would establish a tax credit for the 3D printing industry for both the manufacturing of 3D printers or their medical instruments and device creation. With a 50% tax credit for capital investment and a $2 million cap, we expect both increased industry relocation here in Oregon and or an expansion of existing companies to create 5 full-time additional employees to become eligible. Medical, scientific, and business journals have been featuring in-depth articles about this exciting technological advancement. House Bill 3425 was even featured on 3dprinting.net, a leading publication in the 3D printing industry. The feature article states, if you're a 3D printing investor, venture capitalist, or any investor, you may find yourself in Oregon in 2014. The article went on to say, if you own a 3D printing company, you might want to talk to Oregon about moving your business there. Colleagues, this is just the type of publication we want. If we truly want to create a fast-paced, high-tech industry here in Oregon, I'm very pleased to hear that Oregon would be a viable option for the 3D printing industry. Our goal is to grow another acre in Oregon's Silicon Forest so we can get in front of the technology and become the trailblazer in its growth. Alongside Xerox, Facebook, Google, HP, and Intel, these high-tech industry jobs bring high-skilled workers, many of which are trained in Oregon and the surrounding communities. These companies are greatly improved by their economic activity. Some of you may be asking, what is 3D printing? I will briefly explain and let the experts here today expand on what I'm about to tell you. It's the next generation of paper and toner printers whose technology is now able to put down a thin layer of a more substantial material until those thin layers form a solid object. Computer-generated software enables a 3D printer to produce objects of any shape on the spot and as needed. This new technology will change and customize every industry. Lakea is a digital entertainment company located in Hillsboro, which uses a 3D printer to make their models.
It's Leica.
Leica.
It's Leica.
So you're familiar with Leica, which I know Nike has a 3D printer as well. So animated feature films for Paranorma and Caroline. Or if you watch the Super Bowl, Leica used a 3D printer for the M&M commercial. Also today, we have Trinity Labs testifying on behalf of House Bill 3425, and they are a 3D printer manufacturer company located in Portland, who we found out about upon the introduction of this bill. They sought our office out. You may remember the Carnival Cruise Liner that got stuck for days in open waters that led to some unsavory situations on board the ship. Well, Carnival Cruise Lines is already looking into obtaining a 3D printer on board so when a part breaks, they can simply print that part and repair it out on the ocean without the need to wait for open ocean delivery. With all these industries using 3D printers, it's still the medical advancements that get me very excited about the technology. You have seen articles both on the House floor and updated for you today on OLIS, the ability to reduce the cost of healthcare while making substantial medical advancements is underway when 3D printing enters the medical field. 3D printers can soon utilize stem cells to print fully functioning organs. Dentists are printing teeth, doctors are printing bones, and labs are printing blood cells. The University of Pennsylvania is currently finishing a research program where they have injected rats with diabetes with 3D printed blood cells to their extremities to regain the mobility and functionality in an attempt to alleviate the need for diabetic-related amputations. The human trials begin later this year. 3D printers have already been used to print 30 fully functioning bladders, jaws, teeth, and even skin grafts for burn victims have been printed, which greatly reduces the cost, waiting time, and vastly improves the quality of life. Use of adult stem cells in 3D printing will soon render obsolete the organ donor waiting list. I hope that you will continue to learn more about the exciting emerging industry of 3D printing, and I hope that we can work together to soon make organ a preeminent in the 3D printing world. I want to thank you for your time and attention to House Bill 3425. With that, to keep it brief, I'm going to turn it over to the experts over here, and I will let Ezra introduce himself for the record and what his company does.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, members of the committee. I'll keep it brief. My name is Ezra Zygmuntowicz. I'm the CEO and founder of Trinity Labs. Moved up here from the Bay Area to Oregon about 2 years ago to start this company, kind of get out of the rat race down there. We really like it up here, and so far we've created about 12 Oregon jobs. And we started off with many of our components being manufactured over in China and overseas, and we've slowly been bringing more and more of those back in-house and being manufactured here in the States and in Oregon. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but we have a couple of examples of some parts that we've printed recently. We brought a small 3D printer just to kind of show you what one looks like, because a lot of people have never seen one before. Basically, they work by having a X, Y, and Z in 3D space moving axes so that they can lay down. Basically, if you have a computer model of an object such as this, you run it through your slicing engine that will take this and slice it into 1,000 layers of X, Y coordinates. And then this will go ahead and lay down a thin plastic hairline extrusion smaller than a human hair and create each XY layer as it moves up to create a full 3D object. So you can create shapes that you can't create with traditional CNC machining. And this is the ink, so to speak, for a 3D printer. It's a plastic filament that just comes in multiple colors and spools. It comes on a spool such as this. We also are partnering with a company in Hermiston, Oregon, that is manufacturing this ink, so to speak, for the 3D printers. So keeping it in the family here in Oregon. We are currently doing booming business as far as we can't keep up with our orders right now. And we're trying to manufacture as many of these printers as possible to keep up with orders. And we're planning to grow and continue to try to stay in Oregon as much as possible. We are having lots of Silicon Valley investors trying to woo us away to the Bay Area. And I have done a former company with venture capital investment in San Francisco, but I would much prefer to stay up here in the Silicon Forest, if at all possible. And so this bill speaks to my wallet and my heart as far as the company goes. And with that, I will keep it brief and turn it over to you guys if you have any questions I could answer for you today.
Thank you. And the good news is we have venture capital in Oregon, too, so let them talk to you before you make any decisions. Do we want to hear from the other member of the panel, or are you here just to answer questions? Or?
Thank you. My name is Rose Clark. I'm the Chief Operations Officer of our company, but I am here to answer questions if they're applicable to me.
Okay.
Also, just wanted to mention that we obviously are in support of the House bill. That's why we're here.
Very good. Thank you. Other questions? Cool. Representative Parrish and then Mintz.
Okay, so I want to see them. You got them up there. Can we like feel them and play with them?
Yeah.
And I think
with children, yeah. Toys.
It does make
sense. We need to have you on the record. If you're testifying.
Oh,
so
Reagan Robinson, as
it's got to be on the microphone. You got to be. You got to do the whole thing here. Representative Doherty.
Yeah, just kind of a comment. Hillsborough High School's had a 3D printer for about 2 or 3 years that was donated by one of the high-tech companies in Washington County. And at least for a lot of the kids in the tech program, it's been a good adventure for them to be able to go through and design things like this that you're looking at and then go through and see what the differences are. So at least on the high school level, and they may be the only one that has a 3D printer, but it's quite large, and
I think
it's really doing a good job.
Chair Doherty, one of the things that Ezra didn't really touch on is one of the things they're doing with theirs is making their heads interchangeable. So the system will work for printing anything, and they can change the head for different materials that go through. They work with this material here, but they have customers buying the units, switching out the head to do some of the biological and give a list of some.
The program at the University of Pennsylvania that worked to print blood vessel structures. They used one of our printers, and they modified the head. We helped them modify the head to create a extruder that used sugar water solution that is heated up and printed with to create the blood cell structure. And then they took that structure into the lab and grew the cells on it and transplanted it successfully into mice and then into some apes. And so they're working towards human trials of being able to generate blood vessel structures to the shape of a person that they need, right? And then there's also a lot of prosthetics going on where, say, somebody has a prosthetic hand and the interface between what they're left with and what they need could be 3D scanned and then immediately 3D printed and tested right on the site. So this technology is a great enabler of many medical devices as well as prototyping in general for manufacturing rather than the need to create a model and send it off to China and wait a month to get back your prototype to find that one little bit is wrong. You can do that 5 times a day. So I'll leave it at that.
That's the experience where I encountered it at Nike as a footwear developer and another material, and you mentioned lots of different materials that we're using for tooling on footwear, the midsole and outsole, that's in a flexible sort of format so that you actually see how a design for an outsole or midsole works. So it's very useful. Other discussions, other comments, questions? Representative Betts, sorry, you asked before.
That's okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So 2 years in Oregon, what have you found here that you didn't find in California and vice versa?
I like Portland a lot. It's one of my favorite cities I've lived in. I prefer I prefer Oregon, and you know, I lived in Oregon and Washington for a number of years before I was forced to move to California for a venture startup that I did, and I was happy to get out of sort of the rat down there and get back up here to more of an Oregon lifestyle where I can go out and go hiking a few miles out of the city, or you know, go to the coast or go up the river. And I've found that there's very talented engineering talent here in Oregon that is much more affordable, to be honest, than San Francisco. You know, an engineer in San Francisco that might cost $160K a year salary plus benefits and everything else might be happy with 80 or 90K a year here, right? So it's a lifestyle thing, and it's also my parents live here, and we had a son.
It counts as a lifestyle thing, too.
Yeah, it's a lifestyle thing. But in general, yeah, we're very happy with Portland. Right now, warehouse space is very cheap for us to find and rent, so we're also looking right now for a small retail storefront so that we can raise the visibility and have printers in the windows and do some teaching of classes and whatnot like that, so that we can kind of raise awareness a bit. But overall, we really like Oregon and would prefer to stay here rather than anything else.
Please. So where's your competition?
The biggest 900-pound gorilla or whatever is MakerBot Industries. They're in New York City. And then there's a number of, in this industry, it's really a burgeoning industry right now. So there's a number of companies that are more like two guys in a basement putting mm-hmm. together kits, you know, and you go and you pay them your $1,500 and they say they have a 6 to 8 week waiting list and they go buy all the parts and put it in a box and send it to you, right? So we've grown beyond that so that we can have these in stock and ship them to people on demand. And so we are... we're considered one of the innovators in this field right now. We're not as big as some of the competition. We haven't taken outside investment. I've funded this with money that I've made on a previous company that I did so far myself. But that's starting to run a little low. But we're reaching a point where we'll be self-sustaining soon, which is a very nice place to get to. I don't want to wander off topic here.
I had a follow-up. So what is it that keeps you from going from your current size to three times that size?
Just time and, you know, growth, money. You know, right now we're in a state where we've designed, you know, our new model printer that we've just brought to market. It has become wildly popular, and it's considered, as far as output quality, is considered the highest output quality machine on the market for under $40,000. Yet we sell it for around $3,000. So, but there is a long logistics chain to get those together, and each machine weighs 65 pounds. So recently we delivered the first batch of 60 of those, and that was close to 2 tons, literally, of printers that we had to package and get out the door. So right now it's just a matter of growing our manpower and growing our manufacturing capabilities and tooling up. We've recently bought a number of larger CNC machines and milling tools and routers so that we can make more of the parts in-house and have to buy less from overseas and stuff. And we've been utilizing local manufacturers for water jet cutting of the aluminum and stuff like that. So we find that there's a lot of resources in Portland that we're happy to work with, and they're happy to have business from us because there's not a lot of business right now. So it's a good place to be right now for us. There's a lot of opportunity for businesses to work together right now in our little industry. So to shorten all that up and answer the question is we're on that growth path. So it's just a matter of keeping up with what we're doing, keep innovating in our designs, and being able to keep up with demand and supply those orders. So,
yeah, okay, that I was going to see if you got that innovation piece, because it's been my experience when I've assisted companies like yours in the past that you've got a very short window of time before all the competition zooms in.
Exactly.
And so it's that innovation piece that keeps you out there
that
busy.
That keeps us out there. Also, I've been working for 18 months on some key strategic partnerships with some large linear motion companies that supply us with some of our key components, such as these Simo stages that we've had custom engineered and co-designed and manufactured with a company, Pacific Bearing, PVC linear. And so,
if I may, the issue I'm more interested in is the availability of people to help you do that innovation piece as opposed to the
right
execution of the good ideas.
Yeah, so we have, you know, out of our 12 or so people we work with, about 8 of them are engineers. So we're a heavy more into R&D than we are into the manufacturing ourselves. We've recently partnered with a contract manufacturer to do some of the actual manufacturing of our pieces in our printer so that we can take that load off of our engineers and let our engineers work on the R&D, because that's the most important part right now to our company. It's to stay ahead of the rest of the pack by keeping innovating and creating new designs. So right now we're in a mode where we're leaning heavily on our partners and on our contract manufacturer to do the physical labor so that our engineering team can throw a bunch of stuff at the wall and see what sticks, see what innovations work and what don't, and then just keep that cycle going.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay. I was particularly struck by the thread that kind of runs between that answer and the point you made earlier about your observation of the differences between California and Oregon around the talent and the cost of some of that talent. So I hope you'll be our partners in spreading that word to others as well.
Great.
Other questions or comments? That's it. Well, we appreciate you being here. We appreciate the story, and we'll certainly be interested in following your success and helping you grow.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you very much.
If I could, just one closing comment. I just wanted to say that that we are here as far as we wanted. Our written testimony will also provide some recommendations as far as some places to gain more information. Also, it'll give our contact information, as we are an Oregon company. We're open and available to anyone for questions to come by and see one of the machines actually in motion if you're interested in seeing that. So please don't hesitate to contact us if we can be of any assistance further information.
Thank you. We'll make sure that gets distributed to the committee.
That was
appreciate it.
Because I first met Trinity Labs and Ezra, they had contacted us when we'd introduced the bill. I didn't even know we had anybody here in Oregon, to be honest with you, when I started this project. And went up and saw what they're doing, and they're definitely at the infancy stages, but they're getting set up to where they're geared up to where they can start cranking these printers out. And they have a good team where they're at. They just are at the point where that hump where they have to get over the top before someone beats them to where they're at technologically. So.
That's exciting, and obviously I think it's another good example of one of the opportunities that Oregon has, and one of the pieces that motivates, I think, the committee's interest in things like the Oregon Growth Board and some of the other suite of tools that growing businesses might use as they grow. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3425. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3468. President Blessing, do you want to go around and introduce it?
It's good.
Take your time as you get settled.
Thank you. I'm going to wear my glasses or I won't be able to read my glasses.
I don't have to read it.
Yes, and Troy, could you please give us a summary?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, House Bill 3468 relating to Task Force on Bridges creates Task Force on Bridges across the Willamette River and Multnomah County, sunsets Task Force on date of convening of 2015 regular legislative assembly, declares emergency effective upon passage.
Representative Gorsuch, who do you have with you?
Can you introduce yourself?
I'm Karen Schilling, Planning Director for Multnomah County.
Very good. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Reed, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Chris Gorsuch, State Representative for House District 49, which includes the cities of Troutdale, Wood Village, Fairview, and the city of Gresham. I am pleased to be here this afternoon to speak in support of House Bill 3468, which would establish a task force on bridges maintained by Multnomah County in the Portland area. This entity would study funding solutions for day-to-day operations, as well as seismic upgrades and other critical capital projects on regionally important Willamette River crossings in the county. These bridges are vital transportation links for the entire metropolitan area, not just the city of Portland. And in these tough economic and budgetary times, we need to explore every option possible to provide a more equitable and robust funding model. In Multnomah County today, these Willamette River bridges carry an average of over 27,000 cars. That's on a per day rate. And we have a maintenance cost of $2.7 million for the 2013 fiscal year. Multnomah County has identified over $500 million in improvements and seismic upgrades that need to be made over the next 20 years, and the annual need is $26.3 million. The seismic upgrades alone are estimated to cost $200 million. So you can see that there's quite a bit to maintaining these bridges besides simply making sure that the paving and the striping and all of that is done. The capital needed to fund all of this does not include any replacement bridges, and so this is just for the existing structures that are currently there. These crossings are an important link for the Portland Metropolitan Transportation System and should be thought of as part of the region, not just the city. I urge the committee to support this task force because these bridges are vital to the Portland Metropolitan Region, and developing a more stable funding source is needed to help maintain these important river crossings. And thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. And before you come back around, let's see if there are any questions for you in, sure. in that place, and then we'll
okay,
be back
good.
Here. Any questions for Representative Gorsuch? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Gorsuch. I certainly appreciate you bringing this bill and the discussion, and appreciate your comment regarding the regional impact. But within that, since we have created a regional government entity, Metro,
right.
recognizing regional impacts of transportation, I wonder why this bill is confined to Multnomah County and wouldn't include the metro, entire Metro District.
Well, this is designed, the task force is designed for the Tri-County area. So currently, the way that Portland's bridges, which are maintained by Multnomah County, the funding comes solely from Multnomah County. Whereas, as anybody from the metropolitan area knows, that Metro does regional transportation dollars, but the bridges are a separate sort of entity. So they're not being, they're not within the scope of Metro's operations.
Follow up? Thinking about it.
Yeah, maybe later.
Okay.
Well, excellent.
Mr. Chair, maybe I missed, I'm sorry I had to step out. I got called out, but maybe I missed the question. And my question, maybe it was the same question Rep. Davis already asked, is why is the state conducting this and not Multnomah County?
There have been a number...
Question? No. Similar, but okay. nothing wrong with asking.
Yeah. Representative Reed, Chair Reed, Representative Cameron. There have been a number of situations in the last few years in the Portland metropolitan area where there was a regional need. I'll cite the Selwood Bridge issue as a regional need, and there was a certain amount of reluctance on the part of Clackamas County, who was one of the major players, to be involved in this. And so what we're trying to do is bring all of the players from the Tri-County area together to talk about this. ODOT is also interested in this process, too, and so that's why the state piece.
Okay, thank you.
Follow up if I may.
Go ahead, please.
Is the Selwood Bridge, I think I'm familiar with it, isn't it all in Multnomah County?
Yes.
No, Clackamas County has nothing to do with the Selwood Bridge.
Except well, that's not true. In terms of the traffic volume,
<They're wrong.
laughs> in terms of the traffic volume, Clackamas County has a lot to do with Selwood Bridge. That's why the need for the committee.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Right. Come on back, and we'll follow you. Shelley, give her testimony, and we also have Amanda Hess. If you'd like to come up and get settled while Shelley's giving her testimony, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Chair Reed and committee members. The county has statutory responsibility to maintain and operate six of the bridges in the Cross the Willamette River Bridge in Multnomah County. Four of those are historic movable bridges. And as Representative Gorsuch said, they are all critical to the transportation system in the metropolitan area. The county welcomes the opportunity to explore funding strategies to pay for the maintenance, construction, and seismic improvements, retrofits, really, of the Multnomah County bridges. We have a stellar record in maintaining and operating, making major improvements to keep those Willamette River bridges functioning and serving the traffic, river traffic, vehicles, pedestrians, and bicycles. there are two amendments that we would like to have considered as part of this bill. One is for Section 1E for the member from City of Portland to be an elected official, to keep that position on par with the other members. And the second one is to add governance of the bridges as part of the study of the task force. Lastly, I would like to clarify that the bill calls for a task force studying bridges beyond the county's responsibilities. As I said, we have six of the 11 bridges that cross the Willamette River in Multnomah County. While we're open to that discussion, it might complicate the funding strategies that would be proposed for some being state bridges, including two interstate bridges, and then our bridges as well. So that's a possibility for an amendment as well. The county has partnered very successfully with our federal, state, and local partners. Selwood Bridge, Portland, has been very involved in that. And so we've done specific bridge projects with our partners. We're pleased to know that the state is interested in looking at a more strategic, long-term funding strategy for all the bridges. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I guess we'll hear from Ms. Hess, and then you might want to comment on the amendments as well. Sure. Go ahead, please.
Hi there. Chair Reed and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Amanda Hess, and I'm the legislative aide for Oregon State Senator Chip Shields of North and Northeast Portland, District 22. Senator Shields apologizes that he is not able to testify in person today. He is currently chairing committee and unable to step away. Real briefly, Senator Shields would like to iterate his strong support for House Bill 3468. The Willamette Bridges are a vital component of the entire region's transportation infrastructure. And as Rep. Gorsuch testified, we are in desperate need of a strategy to keep the bridges properly maintained so that they are safe for the public as well as commercial traffic. The task force created by the passage of this bill will bring together leaders from Multnomah, Clackamas, Washington, and Washington counties, as well as the state, metro, and the city of Portland to develop such a strategy. Senator Shields believes this regional approach is the most effective way to pool resources and institutional capacity to address this issue, and he urges support for House Bill 3468. And I can't answer any questions on his behalf, but as the holder of his calendar, I'm happy to make the point.
That might be the best end.
Okay. There's a staffer right there.
In a very long time. So no questions from Ms. Hess. Representative Gorsuch, do you want to address the Dash 1 amendments that we have and any other changes you might be intending?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We do have a Dash 1. Unfortunately, it came to our attention just before the hearing that we need to adjust a couple of other words in the Dash 1, so it will actually be a Dash 2.
Okay.
Basically, what we say is that on page 1 of the printed bill, line 18, after appointed, we would take that out, delete the rest of that line, and insert from among the commissioners of the City of Portland. And then delete lines 22 through 24 and insert the task force shall study and develop a funding strategy. But you probably don't need to hear
that. I think we got that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You got that part. Okay.
It's right in front of us. If you want to describe that, it sounds like it's consistent with what...
Line 8 and line 10, where it says owned, we will change that, and it will say maintained and operated by Multnomah County. So it's just a change of semantics.
Got it. So we will be awaiting an additional amendment, not be taking action today. So that hopefully is something, Representative Parrish.
Thank you. I guess I'm looking at this, and I appreciate the need for infrastructure. What precludes us? I mean, why do we have to put this into a law? What precludes all of these players from coming together to begin with? I would imagine that this is something that could have just been done regionally without the directive from the state. I guess I'm speaking for the folks in my two counties that I represent, who are not, nobody's here to testify from my two counties. I guess I just have concern that something that can be done regionally, we're asking to the state to give a directive to go do.
So before we have an answer to that, it occurs to me, I didn't, Ms. Hess, I didn't give you a chance to excuse yourself if you want to, so feel free to do that. I think.
I want to hear her answer to it.
Yeah. Actually, I have an answer to that.
Go ahead, Representative Gorsuch.
We have contacted all of the counties involved, and as has been the case in the metropolitan area for a long time,
People aren't necessarily interested in regional approaches. And so by the state stepping in and with ODOT's assistance, we hope to engage in a conversation that will really have a meaningful outcome. We're not going to force anybody, but we are going to ask people to come to the table.
Well, can I?
Representative Perry?
Well, the way I read this is that one member shall be a Clackamas County Commissioner, one member shall be a, I mean, that's a force in my mind that you're going
to. No, well, my point was we're not trying to force somebody to do something. We're asking them to come to the table and be part of the participant.
I guess.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you. I guess I just have a lot of heartburn with we're going to go ask local county people through a law to bring them to the table when they should be grown-ups and come to the table themselves.
But they haven't.
We're not
their
parents.
That's the point of the bill. They haven't come to the table.
Okay.
Let's see if there are other questions for Michelle, and we're not in a work session yet.
Okay.
Appreciate that. Any other questions? Representative Lively.
So I just want to clarify, because you talked about the county bridges, city bridges, and then you also mentioned state bridges, so I'm not sure if this were to, so are there all three of those? I mean, are we talking about bridges that are owned by Multnomah County, City of Portland, but also the state bridges that cross the river?
Chair Reed, Representative Lively, the way the bill is written simply says bridges in Multnomah County that cross the Willamette River. That includes two interstate bridges, a couple bridges owned by the state, and then the bridges that are operated and maintained by the county as well. And we own a couple of those.
But they would all be part of this.
And we heard in the Dash 2 amendments it would say owned and operated.
Okay,
that would clarify.
Thank you. That's where I was. Yeah. Thank you.
Very good. Other questions? Representative Davis.
Thank you. I don't want to beat this point, but I do think it's a very important one that the bill is currently drafted. It says that the governor shall appoint a commissioner from apparently two counties which have said they don't want to be a part of this. To me that, and correct me if I'm wrong in saying that, Representative Gorsuch, but to me that does represent an issue with commissioners who they're elected officials, and if they've said this is not something they want to be a part of, that does raise a concern in my mind.
Well, I would say that what raises a concern in my mind is that everything else in the metropolitan area is supposed to be based upon a metropolitan approach, but we don't do that with the bridges. And that means that the taxpayers in Multnomah County are the only ones who are bearing the load in terms of paying for those bridges. Therefore, it makes sense that it would be a regional approach. Otherwise, it's an unfair advantage to Clackamas and Washington counties.
Stonebridge has more traffic than the CRC.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Well, that's the logic here.
No, I understand, but still, as representatives representing those commissioners, we will talk with them.
It sounds like this may be an advantage of the change we discovered. That needs to be made in the amendment. Gives all of you a chance to connect offline and have some further discussions. That's the list of people who are signed up to testify on House Bill 3468. Is there anyone else who wants to be heard? Any other comments from the committee? If not, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3468. And we need to carry that bill over to our next meeting in the hopes that we may have the amendment you want and have an opportunity for further discussion. That leaves us with House Bill 2765, so open a public hearing on House Bill 2765. There is no one signed up to testify on House Bill 2765, so I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2765 and open a work session on House Bill 2765 and explain to the committee that this, to be perfectly clear, has been requested in the Ways and Means Committee for potential use down the road. It is merely a vehicle. With that, Representative Benz.
I'm Chair, I move to House Bill 2765 to the floor of the due pass recommendation with subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Benz, may I suggest a revision of your motion to move the bill without recommendation?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, without recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Benz moves House Bill 2765 to the floor without recommendation and to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion? Any objections? Representative
Mr.
Cameron.
Chair, we had a bill earlier today where we just moved it to Ways and Means.
Yes. This one has prior reference because it already had that referral on it. 2725, which we moved before, did not have a subsequent. It had not already been identified as needing to go to Ways and Means, so we got that approval from the Speaker's office before we came in. So we added it. If I'm understanding your question about the decision,
question is why don't we just move this? Why don't we just move this to Ways and Means without a
without the prior reference?
Yeah. What, if you just want to use this bill in Ways and Means as a vehicle, that's why aren't we doing the same thing?
Well, and that's what I think I'm trying to explain. The 2725 did not previously have a Ways and Means referral on it, right. So we got that added. In the case of 2765, it already has the Ways and Means on it, so it's just a semantic. The way the motion was worded, I think it has the same effect.
All right.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any objections to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. House Bill 2765 goes on to the Ways and Means Committee. Appreciate that. Closed work session on House Bill 2765. And in the words of our revenue chair, I think we've exhausted our agenda. Is there anything else to come before the committee today? Hearing none. See you on Friday. We're adjourned.
Steph, do you want to see?